Full Story is supported by Telstra. Big ambitions need the right partner, and that's where Telstra comes in. Telstra works with enterprise and government organisations across Australia to help them build, connect, and grow at scale. They support real outcomes, from secure business growth to connecting schools to networks that help keep communities safe. Telstra is a long-term partner for organisations with complex needs and big plans. Together builds better, wherever they go. For enterprise-sized solutions, partner with Telstra.
Hi, Jonathan. It's good to see you.
Hi, Richard.
And Tom, welcome back as well.
Thanks, Richard.
Jonathan, I just want to start with you. Climate Change and Energy Minister Chris Bowen says Australia has 38 days of petrol, 30 days of diesel and jet fuel. What does that actually mean? Does it mean we just jump off a cliff at the end of those days?
What they're saying is we're still getting some replenishment, right? So we're not using those last drops of surplus. And so we still have fuel. Fuel is still coming into Australia. But for how long will that conflict go? How long will the disruption go? And at what stage do we start really using much more than we're importing? In one respect, it's a bit outside of Australia's control. So what does that really mean? Well, at the moment, most of us are still able to get petrol at the local station. The planes are still flying. But if this just keeps extenuating, then there does come a time that the government, state government and federal government need to make some really difficult decisions, which we really haven't seen for decades.
Tom, I'll bring you in here as well. If we can just establish the facts essentially. Right now, are we seeing genuine shortages or are we just seeing people react to anticipated shortages? So essentially, are we in some sort of oil shock?
We're definitely in an oil shock. The international community is of the view that the events in the Middle East, including the blockages in the Strait of Hormuz, is prompting a real crisis in energy supply. Here in Australia, the situation is quite complicated. The federal government says that the shortages that we're seeing are caused by a 100% spike in demand. So from one day to another, there's a doubling of the demand that people want in fuel. And people like Chris Bowen, the Energy and Emissions Reduction Minister, is of the view that if there's a 100% increase in any commodity, there'll be shortages of supply for consumers. That being said, in the last couple of days, we've started to see some more concrete data of what's really going on. For example, 6 or 8 boats that were bringing fuel to Australia haven't arrived. Until the weekend, we didn't know about that. We were being told that deliveries were arriving in Australia as expected and that the refineries were expecting normal passage through to the middle of next month. The other thing that we've learned in the last couple of days is the numbers of service stations around the country where pumps are running out. It's some hundreds, you know, in states like New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland. While there are thousands of service stations, there are localised shortages where petrol or diesel has run out and people can't get the supply that they need.
So we are seeing some effects, but Tom, the government blamed panic buying at the beginning. Are they still saying that or have they just been far too slow to act with concrete measures?
They're still saying that unnecessary purchasing is part of the problem, people buying more than they need, or as you say, people panicking and thinking that they need to maximise whatever access they can get. The easy comparison is being made to toilet paper during the pandemic, people going a bit crazy and buying anything that they could get their hands on. There were some concerns that that message might not be resonating, and the government's obviously feeling the pressure on its communication strategy. But in some ways, I think the cause might be a little bit academic at this point. If people can't get the fuel they need, whether it's because of panic buying or supply problems, it's going to be a political problem for the government, and it's going to have a flow-on effect to everyday lives. People not being able to run their businesses the way they usually do, farmers not being able to operate their farms the way they normally do, equally households perhaps not being able to fill up the tank for dropping kids at school or getting to work.
Yeah, it's understandable consumer behaviour, isn't it? Because the price today is more than it was yesterday, and you get told by the government not to panic, but you know if you wait a few more days, the price will probably be higher. So this is very understandable behaviour, and it probably goes to why governments generally don't want to talk about more extreme measures, because that will just feed that extra panic. And so it's very difficult to get the political messaging on this correct.
So it'll feed that psychological phenomenon. I mean, Jonathan, just give us a sense of how serious this could get, because we use fuel with everything, transport costs, transporting fuel, clothing. It's in every part of our lives.
It's quite a simple equation. The longer that this goes on, the more serious it gets, and then it gets embedded into the economy, it gets embedded into inflation, and costs go up. So initially, when I talk about the market, or you could look at the stock market, is people thought this would be a very short-lived event. They thought there would be a bit of disruption, but that was okay. As the weeks roll on, and as it becomes less or unclear that the US has a clean exit strategy that would guarantee the free flow of oil again. Of course, we see it at the petrol pump, but that also goes through to freight, and it goes into fertilizer, which goes into food prices, and diesel, which goes into tractor costs to, you know, to obtain that food. And it flows through the economy, goes to jet fuel, goes into our holidays, and then this goes into inflation and costs. And one thing I've learned having covered business for many years is once those costs go in, they rarely come out, or if they do come out, they come out to a much lesser extent, and you just end up paying more. And this is really the thing that people are now grappling with, is it doesn't look like such a short-term shock. And if it becomes longer term, then we have a real problem.
Reggie, the government's already talking about inflation going up to 5% this year, and the risk that higher petrol prices persist until 2029. So it's grim in an economic sense for the government and for households.
Do you think, Tom, that Labor's scrambling to deal with this, to prove that it's dealing with this crisis proactively?
I wouldn't say scrambling. I think they're certainly throwing everything out, trying to manage the situation. We've seen roundtable events with industry leaders. We've seen cooperation with state and territory leaders in national cabinet. The federal government's appointed a fuel supply coordinator at the national level. The Council of Federal Financial Regulators, including the ACCC, ASIC, APRA, groups like that, even the Reserve Bank, have met with the Treasurer. So I think they're doing everything in their power, but I wouldn't say scrambling. My sense is that while it's a determined effort, it doesn't have a kind of chaotic feeling about it yet. The political reality might be slightly different. I think the opposition is trying to make the most of shortages and concerns in the community and accusing the government of not having done enough.
So before we get on to how the government can be seen to be doing more, because it sounds like they are doing things in the background, to both of you, how bad could this get? Because you both remember the COVID disruption. Could this be, say, worse than the supply chain disruption that we saw during COVID?
Well, one data point we have on that, or some commentary, I guess, is from Fatih Birol, the head of the International Energy Agency. He was in Canberra this week. He said that in terms of the energy shock, it's equivalent to the twin oil crises of the 1970s, plus Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the flow onto energy markets from that. So that's some pretty grim forecasting, the worst energy crisis in the global system. And look, I think consumers are already feeling it, the politicians are already feeling it, and the system is kind of struggling to respond. So I think it could be bad. I don't mean to be alarmist, but I think hip pocket and political responses are going to be difficult.
Yeah, I mean, the 1970s is kind of the era everyone's looking back to. It was a time right at the end of the 70s where there was rationing for a few different reasons, but ultimately because of the oil shock then. So, I mean, we have an economic problem. There's a geopolitical problem. It can get resolved. We just have no insight into that. So if a deal is struck, if the oil shock subsides, it flows freely, which has been the expectation over the past few weeks that there would be some sort of resolution, then this damage could be short term. But if it does escalate, then, I mean, inflation of 5% would sound pretty good. If we go back to the 70s, we're looking at double digit inflation, and this just flows through the economy. It ultimately leads to job losses and a real kind of upheaval of social cohesion. So how bad could it get? It really depends on how long the disruptions out of the Middle East end go for.
So we're kind of in uncharted territory. This is to both of you. We've seen reporting that a government agency warned of this kind of crisis just months before the war. The IEA, Energy Watchdog, says we're supposed to have a 90-day fuel supply. We don't have that. Why not? And are we to blame in a way for this?
I think the government believes that the 90-day standard that the IEA puts in place is slightly less relevant for Australia because of our place in the world and the fact that all our supplies come via shipping. I think the question of our sovereign capability on refining, our vulnerability if there is conflict in the world, you know, the Strait of Hormuz is hugely disruptive. 20% of global oil supply goes through that strategic waterway. But the broader question could be, what if there was conflict in the Asia Pacific region? Where would that leave Australia? So I think there's a really interesting set of questions to be probed there, and for the question to be asked, if difficult times come to our region, will we have learned the lesson from this kind of situation? I think we're at the very starting point of considering that.
Let's just turn finally to what the government can do. Tom, I'll just start with you on that. What levers do they have? For example, we've seen talk of leveraging gas exports against sort of making sure that countries continue to give us their oil.
Yeah, I think there are sort of three buckets of possibilities here. The first is kind of a public relations, a political one, and we're seeing that already. Government ministers trying to reassure the public, trying to reassure business, and asking people not to buy more fuel than they need. There's a diplomacy bucket. The government is talking to key trading partners in the region and further afield, China, South Korea, Malaysia, Singapore, trying to kind of shore up diplomatic ties. And then the third is using legislation that already exists, fuel supply controls. This is kind of the worst case scenario for the federal government. They haven't been used before. There are state powers that the feds would prefer were acted on first if there are real shortages, putting in place restrictions on how much people can buy, what days of the week people can buy, that kind of thing that we've seen in previous decades in Australia. But the federal fuel powers, I think, are a last resort for the federal government.
Tom, is this a real opportunity for the government to use this crisis to bring in bold reform? I'm thinking of windfall taxes, speeding up renewable rollout.
Yeah, the political cliche is never waste a crisis, and we're hearing that quite a lot in Canberra at the moment. There is a possibility. Jim Chalmers has already said that the budget is going to include tax reform. He believes that the crisis we're seeing at the moment is a reason to go harder on reform and not pull back. There was also a leak to the ABC last week that has been reported widely, including by Guardian, that there is a possibility of a new 25% gas export tax. It's something that campaigners and crossbenchers, the Greens, have been pushing for a long time. Essentially, some of the gas companies are doing really well because of the soaring commodity prices, and the feeling is that the taxpayers should get a bit more bang for their buck on the commodities. It looks like the government's at least considering that. There's modelling being done. So there is a possibility for reform here. Of course, we're speaking in the end of March. The budget is not until the second week of May, so there's a bit more water to go under the bridge.
We'll be right back